Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about acupuncture, a traditional Chinese medical treatment that's been around for thousands of years. When it first made its way to the United States, it was treated with a great deal of skepticism. Although it's still considered to be complementary or alternative medicine, millions of Americans seek the treatment every year. And this hour, we're going to find out more. My first guest today is Deb Van Lantenstein. She's a licensed acupuncturist at Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. Hello, Deb.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to start with just a basic description. I mean, a lot of us have seen images of acupuncture. Of course, it shows up in films and on television and advertisements. But I think a lot of us don't really have an understanding of what exactly it is. So describe it for me. What is acupuncture?
So acupuncture is the use of fine needles inserted into the body at various locations to stimulate a response from the body. Acupuncture needles have been used for several thousand years, and what they have found is it kind of stimulates the neurohormonal response, or possibly the nerves. There's a couple different theories on it, but essentially when you put a needle into the body, it's going to stimulate a response because the body thinks that there's been an injury that's taken place. In actuality, there is a small injury, a micro injury, and so it stimulates the brain to sends messages to the body to get some white blood cells to that area and to stimulate circulation of that blood to get whatever, if there's a bacteria or anything else that needs to take care of, it's going to start stimulating that blood circulation in order to heal that location. In effect, it also stimulates anything along that pathway that has stimulated that nerve or that neural hormonal area in order to get that circulation going and then stimulate healing.
What are some common things that you would treat with acupuncture? What do people come to you for?
There's a wide range of things that people come for generally that can be allergies or asthma or anything sinus related. It can be headaches, TMJ, back pain or sciatica, musculoskeletal problems, other ones besides maybe sciatica or back pain or knee pain. Also, people come for insomnia, anxiety, dizziness, depression, high blood pressure, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, indigestion, and other digestive problems, sexual dysfunction, post-operative recovery. So there's a lot of different areas that acupuncture can help with.
And you're talking about physical ailments and mental illnesses.
Absolutely. We have found in the case of, say, depression or anxiety, a lot of times it's a dysfunction of an organ system. And so when you stimulate the blood flow to get those organs to function better, automatically those symptoms related to a mental health problem like depression or anxiety are lifted.
I think when people who tend to be skeptical about something like this hear this broad array of things that acupuncture could be used for, I think that increases the skepticism. How would you set someone at ease or at least try to open their mind?
Well, you know, actually, I had the same skepticism probably about 25 years ago. I had visited a chiropractor who happened to have a map of the body according to Chinese medicine and had all these acupuncture points. And I thought then, how could acupuncture treat that many things? And it wasn't until, you know, a decade later when I went to school that I learned why that was the case. And it's because it's set up on what we call meridians or other pathways. And when you put a needle in a certain pathway, whether it's for a liver issue or a spleen or a kidney issue, you're actually stimulating along that particular nerve, and that will send messages to the brain to stimulate those areas and send blood to those areas. So it's not just random points that you're putting in the body that are a miracle cure for everything. It's very scientific, and they found that when you place points in certain areas, it stimulates the brain to send white blood cells and blood flow to those areas, which increases that circulation. It gets the blood flowing in those areas to help heal that particular area.
So you said you were skeptical. What was your experience that changed your mind?
Well, about, I would say, 12 to 15 years ago, I had injured my back, and I had actually gone to multiple places to have, you know, to have help and get my back feeling better. And after a year and a half, my back still wasn't better. And the person that I was seeing said, you know, maybe you should try acupuncture. And sure enough, I went to an acupuncturist, and after that first visit, I went home and I slept for 4 hours. And that's when it made me realize that my back pain wasn't just a problem with my back. It was a problem with more things. I was overworking, I wasn't getting enough sleep, and I was essentially burning the candle at both ends. And I realized that acupuncture was more than just putting needles in your body for that specific problem. It was helping to balance the whole body.
So how long, I mean, it sounds like that first treatment changed your view of acupuncture. You continued with the treatment. How long before you got relief for your back?
Well, you know, I would say after I went home from that treatment and I slept, my back pain felt much better after that. And I would say it was probably a couple of more treatments when I really felt that it had diminished by 50 to 75%. So maybe over the course of a week or two.
And what made you decide to change your career and become an acupuncturist?
Well, ironically, I had just been talking to my sister a week or two before that, and I said, you know, I feel like I want to do something in the health field, and I'm not sure what, but I really want to make a difference. And after I had that acupuncture treatment, I knew exactly what it was I had to do.
And what kind of training did you get to become an acupuncturist?
There are nationally accredited schools. There's about 50 of them, maybe more, across the United States. And you have to have your undergrad, health-related classes. You go in going for a master's degree program, and it's a 3 to 4 year process, depending on what you want to study. If you want to study just to get your master's degree in acupuncture, it's about 3 years. If you want to get a degree in oriental medicine, which includes herbal studies, that's about 4 years.
I'm talking with Deb Van Landenstein, a licensed acupuncturist at Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. Dr. Nicole Nicely is here. She's a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine and director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at UIHC at the Iowa River Landing. Dr. Nicely, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, as a medical doctor, tell me what your journey was. How did you get involved with acupuncture?
So it was really about having patient-centered care. When I began my journey as a physician at the University of Iowa, I was very interested in creating a space for our patients that was centered in their needs beyond just medicine. And I realized that there are many techniques that are very, very old, acupuncture being one of those, which is part of traditional Chinese medicine, along with many others from Ayurveda, which is several years old, and herbs that are, you know, have been used for thousands of years. And so my quest was to better understand, number one, how can we integrate these in a way that is safe and effective? How can we provide evidence-based education for our patients, for our future physicians, which are residents, medical students, and also how can we contribute to the evidence by conducting research that can help us understand, number one, safety, efficacy, but also how to bring those to healthcare. So I've had the pleasure for the last 25 years to work with many acupuncturists in the community, along with other healthcare providers that provide techniques such as healing touch or chiropractic care as examples, and to help my patients identify licensed providers, what are the best techniques that might match their need, their particular healthcare need, where are techniques that would be contraindicated at that time, how to find techniques that maybe they can afford or in an area that they have access to. So that's basically what I do.
Well, and I'm thinking back 25, 30 years ago, and acupuncture and many of these alternative or complementary medicines that you're talking about were seen with a great deal more skepticism than they are today. Was that a controversial move to try to bring these treatments under the wing of traditional medicine at the University of Iowa?
Well, I think an academic center's mission is to explore new techniques to understand how to help our patients use. So it is actually the perfect location to explore how do you do that safely to educate our providers. I think we would be serving the community by educating providers in a way that wherever they end up as physicians, they're able to collaborate with licensed providers that are healers in their community. Back when I had the opportunity to actually participate in many meetings in the emerging National Institutes of Health Center for Complementary Medicine and begin to see the early studies. And so, again, I think that's our mission to do, and I've had nothing but noticing benefit and, you know, patient satisfaction increase with bringing those to the healthcare system.
And what was the need that you saw that wasn't being filled for your patients? Why this becomes so important to you?
So several surveys have shown that about 70% of the patients do not tell their physicians or healthcare providers that they use complementary medicine. So just then alone, you're seeing that you have two completely separate pathways. So patients are not telling their physicians when asked why. The most common reason is I was not asked, followed by my physician knows nothing about it, and followed by my physician could be upset at me. And so that said, I felt that it was very important for a physician to be part of the entire care of their patient and coordinating and understanding. So for a physician to be able to provide an opinion, they need to be informed, and they need to know what the research shows, what are the licensure requirements in their area, and hopefully get to know providers in the area. They're, you know, excellent providers, just like we know physical therapists and, you know, occupational therapists and, you know, speech therapists and many others that are part of the healthcare. So I think that was the main purpose.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me right now, Dr. Nicole Nicely, professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine and director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at the UIHC Iowa River Landing. Deb Van Landenstein is a licensed acupuncturist with Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. We'll also take an anthropological view of acupuncture in a few minutes. And of course, we'd love to hear from you as well. Share your experiences. Ask your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're learning about acupuncture. It's a traditional Chinese medical treatment. It's been around for thousands of years. It has become increasingly popular and increasingly accepted in the United States. And with me this hour, I have Dr. Nicole Nicely, a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. She's also director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Iowa River Landing. Deb Van Landenstein is also here, a licensed acupuncturist at Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. And Dr. Nicely, before we move on to our anthropological view of acupuncture, I want to ask you, I mean, talking about using alternative and complementary medicine with in a research environment, using it as evidence-based practice, tell me, I asked Deb earlier about the things that people come to her for with acupuncture, but scientifically, what do we know acupuncture is effective for right now?
So I think pain is probably the one that we have the most evidence. For a variety of reasons, there are more studies in pain. Pain is a little easier to evaluate. You either have pain or you don't. There are things that acupuncture use. There are many conditions that acupuncture has been used traditionally, but they may be a little harder to evaluate. As an example, mood disorder, you know, depression, it might take many months. There are other conditions such as the immune response, improving your immunity in the cancer setting. You know, those things are harder to study. And so we don't have as much evidence for those as an example. So for pain, we have good evidence. We have evidence for nausea related to chemotherapy, whether it's headache, tension headache, migraine headaches, back pain, tennis elbow, bursitis of your shoulder. we have good evidence for those knee pain. Now, when it comes to guiding a patient, what I try to present is, let's say as an example, mood disorder, you know, that was mentioned. So although we don't have enough evidence, one can say, you know, this could be a complement to what you're doing. It could complement your counseling. It could complement a medication that you're taking. So I would not suggest use it in place of, but along with. And so the patient should know we don't have enough evidence. What does it mean? It could mean maybe it doesn't work, but it could also mean that we haven't had enough studies, which often is the case. So the first question is it safe? And the answer is yes. Is it effective? Maybe. We don't know for sure. Is it cost effective for you, that individual sitting in front of me? So if the answer is, you know, I can pay for it, I would like to try, and I understand there is not enough evidence. So the answer is, why not? You can do that as a complement. Many things in complementary medicine do not have adequate evidence, even though they're thousands of years old, but it simply may mean that we haven't had enough research yet.
Well, and you asked the question, is it safe? So are there dangers to acupuncture?
So I would say there are dangers to everything in a way, if you use it incorrectly. So acupuncture should be used by licensed providers. And so in the state of Iowa, of course, acupuncture is licensed for providers that are trained as just described, but also physicians, as an example, should receive a training called medical acupuncture by which they receive an extra year training and board certified. That would be example of a licensed provider. You should use sterile needles. They are disposable. The needles in the United States are solid needles that typically have a little guard, so you can only go so much deep. There are needles that are used in other countries that do not have those and could be much longer. So there are reports of organs being perforated, but again, you would have to be, you know, using that in a way that is not congruent with how it's recommended in the United States. There are certain conditions, as an example, if you have cancer and you're getting chemotherapy and your white counts are really, really low, you could potentially be at risk for an infection. Or if you take blood thinners. So in that case, one has to be careful, perhaps reconsider acupuncture, perhaps using that with a medical acupuncturist that understand that particular condition. But I think, generally speaking, acupuncture is very safe as a technique used correctly.
And Deb, let me ask you. I know that this is a question you get a lot. Does it hurt? Deb, are you still with us?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
So does it hurt?
Most people would say it rarely hurts. Most people will experience a dull ache around the base of the needle or a slight tingling feeling when the needle's inserted. Points on the extremities, like your toes or your fingers, they can be a little sharp, but that sensation is usually pretty brief. Having acupuncture needled, it can feel like a weight is being placed in the area, and sometimes as that heaviness feeling expands throughout the body where that needle is placed, but that heaviness tends to be more of a calming response than an oppressive feeling.
All right. Well, I want to get to the phones. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions, your concerns, your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Laura is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, two things. One, my mom had real severe vertigo about a year and a half ago, woke up with it in the middle of the night, and I was able to call friends that have an acupuncture clinic here in Des Moines, and she walked in kind of like a zombie, and when she walked out, she walked like a human being. She still wasn't perfect, but that for me was, if there was any doubt in my mind about acupuncture, after that, there was none. And then the other question is for your panelists. I'm concerned about this sort of new fad in Iowa with dry needling, that it seems like maybe physical therapists are doing this. And I'm a little concerned, at having gone to nursing school and, you know, aseptic and techniques and making sure things are sterile is, you know, on my mind. And I'm wondering what the panelists think of this as a treatment.
Well, absolutely. And Dr. Nicely, let me let you go first. First of all, what is dry needling?
So I think this is a bit of a different scope. You know, dry needling, basically you're introducing needles that would be similar to acupuncture to certain points. As an example, tennis elbow. So that's a pain that you get in your elbow for certain movements. Tennis, playing tennis being a typical one. That's why it's called tennis elbow. And it can be painful, can last a long, long time. So theoretically, by applying needles in the area, you kind of disrupt, you know, the region. You create a little inflammatory response similar to what was described. And you have basically blood cells going to the area and some healing forms. Now, dry needling is not a complementary medicine technique. It's actually a medical technique that people need to be licensed for. It needs to be provided by licensed providers that could be physical therapists or it could be physicians, you know. So it's a bit of a different scope because this is not something that one does in the complementary and integrative medicine world. It is done within the medical field and people have to not only be trained for it, be licensed for it, but they have to be, you know, within the hospital scope. So I would say that it is a new technique for which there is evidence for benefit, yeah.
Okay, but you're also saying that somebody needs to be trained and licensed to use this technique.
That's right. So a physical therapist is a licensed provider, and they would be practicing within their scope of practice by using dry needling if they received appropriate training. Yes.
Is that a note of caution, though, for people who might be interested in pursuing this kind of treatment to make sure that the provider has the licensing necessary and the actual education necessary to do this?
Well, again, it's a little bit of a different question unrelated to the scope of what we're discussing today because, again, typically, you know, a physical therapist needs to follow orders by a physician. So you'd have to have your physician write an order that would be done. So it starts with the physician. And so I would say that, you know, there are a lot of safety guards in there to prevent people from receiving inappropriate treatment because, again, this is not an alternative technique. It's actually a medical technique. They're just novel. And in a way, I think they borrowed from the acupuncture knowledge base to develop that technique.
Okay. And Deb, do you have anything you want to add?
Actually, I would agree with that. They have borrowed that, basically, the use of acupuncture needles. They're using actual needles. They're acupuncture needles. And what they're calling the dry needling is essentially putting in the pain areas, which in Chinese medicine we call those asha points. And so it's essentially the same putting needles in. However, I would also caution against making sure that there is enough accredited hours of training because there can be injuries to those sites without proper training.
And let's move the conversation again. You're welcome to join at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to introduce our anthropologist now. Emily Wenzel is an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and director of the University of Iowa International Studies Program. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that this is one of your areas of research. So I've already mentioned several times that acupuncture is a few thousand years old. But give us a little bit more background on where this comes from.
Yeah. So as a medical anthropologist, I specialize in comparing different cultures' understandings of healing, sickness, and the body. And so when we talk about acupuncture in our cultural context, we have to realize that it's coming from a totally different understanding of health and the body. Every culture has their own, and every culture's medical system is based on that. And they are better or worse at certain things depending on those features. So in traditional Chinese medicine, the understanding of the body is quite different from the understanding of the body in Western medicine. In Western medicine, we see the body kind of as a machine. It's got a bunch of parts. They work together like a machine. And if something breaks, you fix it. We also see the mind and body as very separate. That's a thing in Western culture. In traditional Chinese medicine, the understanding of the body is that it's a total system. So what makes you healthy is when your bodily energy or qi flows well within the body. What makes you ill is when there's a blockage in that energy. And the energy flows around lines called meridians, which you heard about before, that don't map on to any sort of Western geography of the body. So they don't map on to nerves. They don't map on to organs. They're sort of their own thing that you can't sort of see with your eyes. Health, then, in that system means you take care of your body as if it were a garden. You do lots of preventative things. You eat well. You take herbs. You move about in nature. You exercise to keep your qi flowing. So that's sort of the fundamental difference between the systems, and acupuncture is coming from that idea of the body as a garden that you tend to keep the energy flowing.
And Tell me about how it came to the United States. When did it start showing up? Oh, that's not your area of expertise. That's all right.
I was making the I don't know symbol.
Right. But Dr. Nicely, when did acupuncture start showing up in the United States?
So if I recall correctly, we had the president of the United States who was traveling to Asia and became acutely ill. And at that point, received acupuncture, and with all the intense, you know, of course, news at the time without Facebook or Twitter, it became something that was raised to the American attention. Acupuncture had been here before, but until that occurred, it really did not seem to be something that was particularly noticeable. And then it sort of, you know, it created the opportunity for research with the creation of the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine at the National Institutes of Health, and with the help of our old Senator Tom Harkin, who actually helped to create that center, lots of money was infused into the field of research to study acupuncture. And so with that, we have had many, many, many studies that have shown benefit and so on, and that sort of generated even more interest.
Well, and Deb, I know that you've also looked into this history. So it was when President Nixon went to China. Can you give us more information about that?
Well, as she had said a moment ago, the journalist, James Reston, actually had appendicitis, and to relieve that pain before and after the surgery, they had used acupuncture, and he was so impressed with that he brought that information a little bit more widely known here in the United States. But I will tell you that acupuncture made its way to Europe in the 17th century, and by the 19th century, the doctors, especially in France, were publishing a lot of papers on their accounts of acupuncture. By the 1880s, papers were coming to the United States already. In 1829, there was a Tavernier's article came about to the United States describing the elements of operative surgery and how to perform acupuncture with operations similar to that of electrostimulation or electroacupuncture. Not that long after that, 1887, there was the first documented arrivals of a couple of acupuncturists and herbalists into eastern Oregon. And as it turns out, they were in the mining town of John Day in Oregon, and they were treating both the Caucasian and the Asian community there. It's documented that they were arrested multiple times, but the cases were always dropped or dismissed because the supporters of acupuncture, those that were receiving treatment, would come out and protest. So then you fast forward into the early 70s, there was actually a couple of pioneers in acupuncture that really brought it forth as this was happening. And then James, you know, he had a surgery in 72. But in 1971, Barbara Burney was a person in California. She had chronic fatigue, and she traveled to Canada to get acupuncture. And then as she was feeling better, she got a referral to an acupuncturist in San Francisco who was practicing what we'd consider illegally now because there wasn't even legislation in acupuncture in California at the time. So when she went back to the United States and she got treated in San Francisco, she started pursuing legislation to legalize acupuncture, which actually did happen around 1975. And Jerry Brown, the governor, had signed it into law then. Then she traveled to the United Kingdom and became the first licensed Caucasian acupuncturist and then came back to practice in America after that. Around the same time, there was another acupuncturist from China who had studied in Singapore. She moved to the United States in 1969 and also practiced in California, and she had been arrested as well in 1975 before the legislation had passed. And the same thing happened. A lot of her patients came to protest, and indeed they dropped the charges against her as well. So this was all kind of happening around the same time. I think early 70s to mid-70s is when acupuncture started, you know, rising to the forefront. But certainly James Reston, he really helped bring that further out so people knew a lot more about it.
So even in the 70s, it was seen with a lot of skepticism. So from your perspective, when do you feel it made that leap and became a much more mainstream treatment, Deb?
You know, I have really seen acupuncture schools really started growing in the late 80s and early 90s. And so by the time, you know, I went to school in the early 2000s, it seems like it's become much more mainstream. It was slowly gathering strength, I guess you could say. And then I would say in the last 15, 20 years, it's really exploded and people are turning to it. And for a number of reasons, I think a lot of people are finding that Western medicine is not working for them. They don't want to be on medications. They don't want to have surgery, and they're looking for alternatives.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions, your concerns, your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Deb Van Lantenstein. She is a licensed acupuncturist with Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. Dr. Nicole Nicely, a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine and director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at the UIHC Iowa River Landing. And Emily Wenzel, associate professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and director of the UI International Studies Program. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about acupuncture. And with me, I have Emily Wenzel, an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and director of the University of Iowa International Studies Program. Dr. Nicole Nicely, a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. She's also director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at the UIHC Iowa River Landing. And with me also is Deb Van Lantenstein, a licensed acupuncturist at Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. We have a lot of people on the line who want to be part of this conversation as well, and you're welcome to join. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And I want to ask you, Emily, before we get to the phones, we were talking about where acupuncture came from and also, you know, how it traveled to the United States. Deb just gave us some history. It was viewed, and still by many is viewed with a lot of skepticism, but it seems to be so much more mainstream now. Why do you think the United States seems to be more open to this idea at this moment in time?
Well, I think people are looking for a variety.
Well, I'll let you start that answer again. Okay.
Oh, was I turned off?
Yes.
I think people are looking for solutions to all the problems they have, and different medical systems really specialize in treating particular kinds of problems. So, for example, Western medicine is excellent at treating things like infectious disease. Vaccines have changed the world. Things like acute organ failure or a heart attack. Mm-hmm. But the system is historically not great at treating things like pain, things that are mind-body kinds of issues. What acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine are excellent at are treating those kinds of mind-body complex issues. So, for example, pain is a classic. And I think Dr. Nicely was talking about how there's great evidence for its efficacy in pain. I would add that one problem you face when you try to use another culture's healing system in your own culture is that you may not have a way to make sense of it, a way to evaluate it, right? If it's based on an idea of the body that we don't have, right, this flow of qi, how do you then evaluate it using the tools of Western medicine? And we're working to develop those tools, as Dr. Nicely, the research in her clinic, is doing. But also you need to look at that own system standards of evidence, right? In Chinese medicine, there are people who are considered good at their job and bad at their job. And so you need to see, does this person have the correct training in their system? Does the evidence exist in their system before you use it? So I think acupuncture has also become more common and popular as we've adopted ways of understanding what can make it a good or bad practice in our country.
Well, and Dr. Nicely, I know you want to emphasize that you see this as complementary medicine. So you want physicians to know about treatments that their patients are pursuing, but it's a two-way street as well. I mean, why do you think that's so important to emphasize that this is something that you feel should be part of a treatment plan, not necessarily the whole treatment plan?
Right. I think a collaborative work between a health provider, whether it's a physician or a physician assistant, nurse practitioner, or dentist and others, and a acupuncturist is essential. I've worked for many, many, many years with licensed acupuncturists as well as medical acupuncturists in my area. It's a great relationship. It works both ways. Whether the acupuncturist, as an example, sees someone walk in their office with chest pain and they can call me and say, Dr. Nicely, can you please take care of that and save someone's life? whether I will call the acupuncturist and refer somebody with chronic pain for which, you know, medications are not optimal for that patient. I think it's a very collaborative effort, and it's important to make sure that we don't withhold, as an example, life-saving treatment or treatment that can help keep someone healthy. Again, acupuncture and the medical care do not have to be either or. They work very well together.
Well, and you gave me an example during the break of someone with chest pain showing up at the acupuncturist, which is not the place to go with sudden onset chest pain. I mean, tell me about that.
That's right. And so, I've tried for many years to get to know the community of holistic providers and have a very good working relationship with them. And so I was very pleased to have someone call me and say, you know, I have someone with chest pain here and I think they should be seen. And, you know, for me to facilitate making sure that that patient get properly addressed. And probably I would say the acupuncture saved their lives by recognizing that was not an acupuncture treatment that person needed. So that's an example. And for a physician to recognize, you know, this person in chronic pain, chronic fatigue, could benefit from acupuncture, and it would actually enhance their care. It may actually relieve some of their symptoms. And so, you know, why not work together?
Well, and Deb, is that something that was addressed in your training, that, you know what, people might come to you with a problem that you cannot help them with, and you may need to help them get emergency treatment?
Absolutely. I think, well, you know, the study that we have is also we have some Western medical background training as well, because someone might come in to our office experiencing chest pain. We would rather they go somewhere quickly and efficiently and take care of something like that than, you know, have some tragedy happen in our office. Absolutely. We would refer.
I want to get to the phones now. Brian is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi.
Nice. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
just listening, I feel like there's a lot of things not being addressed here. So I follow doctors such as David Gorski, Mark Chrisliff, Dr. Stephen Novella, and Harriet Hall. And I feel like that there's not the voice of the real medical community being put in here. I understand that you do have a medical doctor on, but there's a reason why these are not really accredited by the medical community, because there's no standard of care. And I feel like, for instance, just while I was listening, there was a few things said, like, it's not measurable, or we may not have found a way to measure it. That is a complete special pleading statement. If you can't measure, like, we're throwing the scientific method right out the window. And so these doctors, they basically break down scientific studies, because you got to, being not a doctor, you have to find people you can trust. And they break down studies so you can so the average person can understand them. And so far, every single study, which, by the way, there have been a lot of studies on acupuncture, have either been inconclusive or found no evidence. There's even a recent one involving electrostimulation. And there are controls in the study where they just put they just do a random spot. And I just feel like there's not, the science-based medicine is not even being addressed here. And it's really disappointing in a lot of ways. I mean,
all right. Well, Brian, I think you have made your point. And we also have another email from KT in Iowa City. You shouldn't be promoting pseudo-medicine on IPR. By the way, this is not a promotional program, but it's been repeatedly shown to be no more effective than placebo in actual medical journals. Alt-medicine is not medicine, much like alt-facts. So, Dr. Nicely, these are things that you've heard many, many times in your career. Now, I do need to, Brian, this is a medical doctor, and that's why we invited her on the program. She also works in complementary and alternative medicine, as in addition to being part of Western medicine. But Dr. Nicely, can you respond to what Brian and KT are saying?
Sure, of course. I think those are very important questions. I think, as you all know, science over the last 150 years of scientific medicine has worked really hard to find evidence. A lot of medical treatments that we offer to our patients, as an example, have inadequate evidence, and we're trying to build As an example, hormone therapy for menopause was an example that we discovered that was not as safe or effective as we thought. So we're always changing. Now, briefly, given the constraints of our time, I'll refer the readers to a website, and it's called N as in Nancy, C-C-I-H dot N as in Nancy, I-H dot G, OV, so it's the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine at the National Institutes of Health. There is a whole review of acupuncture in depth, including the evidence for each of the various conditions. So it turns out that there is actually enough evidence to justify using acupuncture. And not only that, but there are standards of care. The acupuncturists that are practicing in the state of Iowa, they're licensed by the Iowa Medical Board. They have to complete a specific training that was just listed. We also, for medical acupuncturists, they receive a one-year training, and they have a board certification process. And there are standardized care. For acupuncture to be accepted to hospitals in many academic center hospitals in the country, they're part of the National Consortium for Integrative Medicine, and those are places like Harvard or Stanford or Mayo Clinic, many of the major medical centers, Cleveland Clinic, they have acupuncture where, again, you have standards of care that have been established. But again, without those are important questions. They need to be always looked at. And I would refer all the readers to that website that I just mentioned at the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine.
All right. And Emily Wenzel, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate the caller and the emailer's point that you don't want to accidentally promote things that might do harm or have no evidence behind them. We need to have actual evidence and standards for health procedures that we do. And the trouble then becomes when one system is borrowing from another that has a fundamentally different idea of what counts as evidence, what do? You certainly don't want to throw away your own standards of evidence. And you certainly don't want to start radically accepting anything because there are a lot of pseudoscientific, harmful treatments not based in evidence floating around. So you don't want to just say, oh, well, people do it, so it must be fine. So I would say that one start, before then the translational work that Dr. Nisley is talking about that the NIH is involved in, one first step is, in that culture's own system of evidence, is there evidence that this works, right? Is there a history of results? By whatever standards that culture has, is it working? Because there's no culture that's like, everything works, everything is fine, this is great. So I really appreciate the caller saying that, and I think first step, look in the system it comes from, is there evidence? And then try to translate to your own system of evidence.
Let's get back to the phone. Sarah is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What would you like to talk about?
A little background on me. I'm a registered nurse. I work in a big hospital, level one trauma center. I work in the emergency room. So I do prescribe to Western medicine, obviously. I believe very completely in it. But I had a really positive experience. My second pregnancy, I was 38 weeks along, and my baby had flipped and was head up. My midwife suggested to me that I try acupuncture to get the baby to flip again and go head down. He was a very large baby. He ended up being 9 pounds, 15 ounces at birth. But I sought out acupuncture treatment, and it was successful. The baby flipped. I got my chance to attempt a drug-free vaginal birth, which is what I very much wanted for him and for me. And I think what I would like to say is, and I especially think that alternative therapies tie into the opioid crisis that we have going on in our country right now. And I think that if people would open their minds and see that we can take from both, both different types of philosophies to treat pain and to treat other symptoms that people typically have in this country, we really could reach a higher level of enlightenment and the way we think about healthcare in general. And I just think it's so great that my midwife suggested that to me. I'm so thankful that she did. And I love acupuncture. And I have a friend who's seeking acupuncture therapy for some fertility issues that she's having. And she's having some success. So I think it's worth, opening your mind and just trying something different.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your call. And Dr. Nisley, I saw you nodding your head. There's a lot of evidence for that being an effective treatment.
So let me just say, a lot of evidence, meaning that, you know, you'd have to have had, you know, a number of studies, but there is good evidence.
Okay.
You know, and so we have evidence that said that, where studies have used acupuncture, especially using a technique called moxibustion, which uses, you know, heat to the needle. And our acupuncturist online could speak more to that. But there is evidence to say that there have been, you know, turning of breech babies with acupuncture, and those are published in medical journals. And so, again, is the what we brought on before. When is enough evidence to say it's safe, it's effective, it's cost-effective, and certainly much safer than a cesarean section where you would end up having to remove the baby? And, you know, so again, it's looking for safety, working with your physician and making sure that things are done in collaboration.
Well, as I'm sort of a natural born skeptic myself. And one thing that always sets off alarm bells for me is when people get a kind of treatment and then they tell me about how amazing it is. And they make it sound as if it was magic that it worked. So that's one of the reasons I'm very curious about the scientific evidence. And Deb, you have an interesting way of talking about acupuncture that you feel takes that magical thinking away from it. You think we need to think about the body as a piece of meat? Why is that important?
Well, okay. So have you ever seen, we've all seen spider webs. We see it, we kind of like to think of that as the fascia that surrounds our body. It surrounds every cell, every organ, every tissue. And so if you ever cut into a piece of meat and you get to that white gristly stuff that kind of stretches, that's fascia. And that's kind of the connective tissue that holds the body in the shape that it's in. And I know Emily was talking earlier about, you know, treating our body like a garden and how that the needle points and putting needles in the body isn't exactly in the nerves, it isn't exactly in the blood vessels. It's that untouchable area. They're just not something you can't see. And so we often like to think about when you put the needle into the body, it's touching that fascia. And the fascia, it kind of like a spider web, has intersections. And at those intersections, when you touch on those areas that they have more fascia, it stimulates more information and signaling to the brain to send more, you know, blood and white blood cells to those areas. So that's why you can put a needle anywhere in the body and you can elicit some kind of response. But when you hit certain acupuncture points where they've got those intersections of different layers of fascia, you actually can elicit a better response.
Well, Deb Van Lantenstein, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Deb Van Lantenstein is a licensed acupuncturist at Acupuncture Wellness Center and Allergy Clinic of Iowa. We are out of time this hour. Dr. Nicole Nicely, thank you so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Nicole Nicely is a professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine and director of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Iowa River Landing. And Emily Wenzel, thank you.
Thanks.
Emily Wenzel, an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and director of the University of Iowa International Studies Program. I know I mentioned earlier in the hour that we were going to talk about Jamberry the horse today. Well, we're going to talk about Jamberry the horse and her unlikely survival on Thursday's Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.